This is the Archaeology News Weekly, and I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A High Court decision day in the M3 Tara case in Ireland is set for the 1st of March. There is also a series of archaeology lectures at Sligo Institute in Ireland. Oatsy, the Alpine Iceman, may have been sterile, according to new research. Thornborough Henge's conservation plan is coming under fire from campaigners, and a grant is given to share the Lake District's archaeological wonders online. A Bronze Age burial site is unearthed on Rathlin Island, and ancient stone houses are uncovered by a bushfire in Australia. Dog graves show that ancient humans cared for their pets, and new flats may threaten a Scottish standing stone. And finally, in China, a 7,000-year-old altar has been discovered. Mr. Justice Thomas Smith of the Irish High Court will be giving his decision on the M3 motorway case on the 1st of March, following a 7-day hearing. Campaigner Vincent Salafia is challenging the Minister of the Environment, the State, Meath County Council and the National Roads Authority on the routing of the proposed motorway through the Tara Skrein Valley. On the final day of the hearing last week, Mr. Justice Smith ruled that he did not require to hear oral evidence by archaeologists and other experts to determine legal issues in the case. Counsel for Vincent Salafia had earlier argued that there were factual disputes in the case relating to whether the Greater Tara area constitutes a national monument. It was submitted that the court should hear oral evidence from experts on such matters and determine whether the Greater Tara landscape is a national monument. The lawyers for the Minister, the State, Meath County Council and the NRA argued that oral evidence was not necessary to determine the legal issues and submitted none of Mr. Salafia's experts had sworn an affidavit that on any of the 38 sites discovered during test trenching of the proposed M3 route, any of them constituted a national monument. While there were conflicting views and opinions by highly qualified experts on both sides, those views were not focused on any issue which must be determined, said the judge. These matters of opinion regarding the archaeological landscape, culture and heritage of the Tara area were extremely interesting, but he had to keep firmly focused on the issues. He did not see his decision not to permit oral evidence deprive Mr. Salafia of any benefit in the case. Mr. Salafia is seeking to overturn the directions given by the Minister and is also challenging the constitutionality of provisions of the National Monuments Amendment Act of 2004 on the grounds that it would give the Minister an unviewable and unfettered discretion to disapply protections for national monuments. While we're in Ireland, a series of public lectures are being held at the Institute of Technology in Sligo, in County Sligo, some of which are organised by the Sligo Field Club. Two of the four lectures will be held at lunchtime to suit people on a break from work. An excavation at Glencurran Cave in the Burren, carried out by Dr. Marion Dowd of IT Sligo in 2004 and 2005, will be the subject of the first lecture. The dig uncovered evidence of important Bronze Age burials and of early medieval occupation. The lecture, Going Underground, Archaeological Excavations in Glencurran Cave, will take place on Wednesday the 1st of February at 1 p.m. in Lecture Theatre A004 of the main reception area. On Friday the 3rd of February, Sligo Field Club will hold a lecture by Michael McDonough of the National Roads Authority on archaeological discoveries along the Inner Relief Road. This will be held in Sligo Education Centre at 8 p.m. Dr. Stefan Berg of NUI Galway will be talking on the Friday the 3rd of March on the results of excavations carried out on Neolithic remains at Mullaghfarna in the Bricklavy Mountains. The lecture will be again at 8 p.m. in the Sligo Education Centre. On Wednesday the 26th of April, there'll be a lunchtime lecture at 1 p.m. in the same again, A0004. Lecture Theatre by Chris Reid of IT Sligo on recent archaeological excavations at Kiltnasheen near Knockvicker, County Roscommon. Kiltnasheen is a training excavation site for students of the 4th-year BSc in Applied Archaeology. The excavation uncovered a medieval church and burials in addition to early evidence of prehistoric activity. Oatsy, the prehistoric man frozen in a glacier for 5,300 years, could have been infertile, a new study suggests. Genetic research, published by the American Journal of Physical Anthropology, also confirms that his roots probably were in Central Europe. Oates' body was found in the melting ice of the Schnatztal Glacier in the Italian Alps in 1991. Examination of his remains has already revealed the Copper Age man almost certainly died as a result of a fight. The assessment is based on the presence of an arrowhead that is lodged in his back and extensive cuts on his hands. The scientists believe the latest genetic research now speculate that Oates' possible sterility could have been a factor that led to his violent end. Dr. Franco Rollo from the University of Camerino, along with his colleagues, examined stretches of DNA taken from cells in the Iceman's intestines. The scientists found two typical mutations common amongst men with reduced sperm mobility. A high percentage of men with such a condition are sterile. Insofar as the Iceman was found to possess both mutations, the possibility was that he was unable to father offspring, and this cannot be eliminated. Dr. Rollo said the idea that Oatsy might have been infertile was intriguing, and while emphasising that this was purely speculation, he noted it would be interesting to pursue the idea further. At the moment, purely as a matter of speculation, he is in touch with some cultural anthropologists, medical anthropologists and archaeologists to obtain information on what this kind of male infertility would have meant to a primitive society. The lack of family or clan could or may represent a kind of social weakness. At first it was thought Oatsy had died of exposure to the cold, but the wounds on his hands and the arrowhead would seem to indicate he died as a result of injuries he received in a fight. Given the suggestion that Oatsy may have been infertile, Dr. Rollo wondered whether the social implications of this could have played a role in the chain of events that led to this final confrontation. The team are also looking at patterns in Oatsy's DNA to try and establish more information about his roots. The scientists discovered that he belongs to the K1 subdivision of the haplogroup known as K. Haplogroups are described as branches of the human genealogical tree. Each haplogroup corresponds to early human migrations to the various continents or geographical regions. K is a comparatively rare haplogroup amongst Europeans, but it has higher frequencies in populations in Ladin in the south of the Alps, and also in the Odsal area to the north. But Dr. Rollo cautioned against the certainty of these results because knowledge of the group's distribution is still poor, and there are still only small population samples to compare it with. Group campaigning to stop the quarrying around the Thornborough Henges in North Yorkshire of England have slammed a recent published conservation plan. Time Watch is disappointed with the proposed Thornborough Henges conservation plan announced last week, saying it fails to include all of the Thornborough complex and fails to address the issues. The consultation group and the proposed conservation plan are a response to a number of concerns raised by many people regarding the preservation and appearance of the Thornborough Henges complex, said George Chaplin, Time Watch chairman. In particular, people are concerned that the wider archaeological landscape is being quarried, and many thousands have signed a petition calling for a 1 mile no-quarry zone around the Henges. The proposed area fails to address this. Time Watch say that the proposed conservation area is barely larger than the scheduled areas at the Thornborough and omits the Ladybridge Farm. The proposed site for further quarrying by tarmac and other areas known to hold archaeology related to the Henges. In addition, there are concerns about the ongoing impact of the landfill site next door to the Henge on the setting of this national monument in terms of looks and smell. The landfill site is outside the conservation area. The group says it will be responding to the consultation and requesting that the plan be redrawn so it addresses the fundamental concerns. Also opposing the conservation plan and joining the campaign to stop tarmac quarrying the Ladybridge site is the Green Party. In a collective decision, the Yorkshire and Humber Green Party has sent a letter to North Yorkshire County Council formally objecting to tarmac's application to quarry more of the landscape around the Henges. Green spokesman Peter Sanderson is urging county planners to reject this application. The Henges at Thornborough are one of the most important Neolithic monuments in the world, he said. We now know that there is significant evidence of a Neolithic village in the planned quarry area, demonstrating well that Thornborough is much more than just some earth banks above the ground. In response, Tarmac said in a statement this week, Tarmac has made no application to quarry the Thornborough Henges. The proposed site at Ladybridge is further from the monument than the present quarry. The proposed site is agricultural land which has been farmed for many years using modern farm machinery. One of North England's richest archaeological areas, boasting over 6,500 sites, is being thrown open for widespread exploration, thanks to a £171,000 grant from the Heritage Lottery Fund. The lottery windfall means that a treasure trove of archaeological wonders can now be shared with the public for the first time. The information is held within the Lake District Historic Environment Record and features information on more than 6,500 archaeological sites, features and areas of interest. The Lake District's 2,292 square kilometres is rich in history and boasts world-acclaimed sites, including 275 scheduled monuments, 1,740 listed buildings and structures, and 21 conservation areas. The area is currently nominated for World Heritage status, and the project will allow local people to develop a better understanding and appreciation of their local area and the importance of conserving it for future generations to enjoy. The money will fund the creation of a website dedicated to the Lake District's wide-ranging archaeology, with information on the prehistoric landscapes, medieval monastic sites and extensive industrial remains. National Park Authority archaeologist Eleanor Kingston said that spiralling national curiosity in the past meant interest in the Lake District had never been so intense. She said that thanks to the Heritage Lottery Fund, they can now share the wonderful records they contain, which range from entries such as the one on the most impressive prehistoric monuments in Britain, the Castle Rigg Stone Circle near Keswick, to the chance find of a coin. She added that as part of the Access to Archaeology project, we want to create an exhibition that can be taken out on tour, update the website, produce a series of leaflets on archaeology in the Lake District, and design education packs and develop activities. Human remains dating back almost 4,000 years have been uncovered on Rathlin Island off the County Antrim coast in Northern Ireland. Senior archaeologists are investigating the remains of a man who could be buried in the Bronze Age. The skeleton was found in a crouched fetal-like position, which would indicate a kist burial in about 2000 BCE. The body was accompanied also by a food vessel. The remains were uncovered on the north coast, close to Rathlin Island's only pub, during work. Local people said that they believed the bones were very old and are similar to others that have been uncovered in the area over the years. Declan Hurl, a senior archaeologist with the Department of Heritage and Environment, and Dr. Colin Breen from the Centre of Marine Archaeology at the University of Ulster are investigating the find. A spokesman from the Department of Environment stressed that it was very early to give details, but said that this looked like a very significant discovery. What the archaeologists are looking at is the possibility of an early Bronze Age site, he said. An initial report will determine whether the site can sustain excavation given its precarious location. Other recent archaeological discoveries indicate the island may have been settled as early as 7000 BCE, placing amongst the oldest of such sites in the whole of Ireland. A Neolithic stone axe factory uncovered on the island's western tip dates from at least 4000 BCE. A bushfire at Tarindara in Victoria, Australia last month has uncovered some of the biggest Aboriginal stone houses ever seen in the Gunditj Mara land. Undocumented sites have been uncovered, including a village thought to be 30,000 years old. The Windamara Aboriginal Cooperative made the discovery during an analysis of its Tarindara Indigenous Protected Area. On January the 22nd, fire burnt 240 hectares, blackening 90% of the property's rocky outcrop on Mount Eccles lava flow. Previously inaccessible land is now showing shells of stone houses as wide as 5 metres, eel traps, water traps, walking tracks, waterways and the remnants of cutting tools. Windamara chairman Damien Bell said that further finds were expected in the coming weeks as Aboriginal Affairs geologists scour the property. This is solid evidence of a permanent dwellings and village. They could house up to 4 families at once. It has been more than 80 years since fire has cleared the rocky landscape. Until 1999 it was used as farming land, but has since been revegetated and used for Aboriginal tourism and cultural purposes. Until the fire, the site had more than 150 sites of Aboriginal cultural significance. Mr. Bell said that the new findings were further evidence that Aborigines in the southwest were not nomadic and that this should be adding significantly to the cultural heritage value of the land. The houses are scattered across the rocky outcrop, most on higher rising land neighbouring fresh waterways with eel traps. Mr. Bell said that this aquaculture system was the main source of trade and food for the inhabitants. One of the most extensive surveys of the earliest known dog burials suggests that humans domesticated canines much later than other studies had shown. The survey, which suggests domestication occurred between 13,000 and 17,000 years ago, counters some earlier theories based on gene changes that distinguish dogs from their wild wolf counterparts. A few of these theories held that domestication occurred anywhere between 40 and 135,000 years ago, much earlier than the new study suggests. The new study, published in the February issue of the Journal of Archaeological Science, suggests that the bond between humans and dogs coincides with canine burials. The earliest known morphological evidence of what was probably dog remains dates back to around 17,000 years ago in central Russia, but the practice of burying dogs appears to have begun between 14 and 15,000 years ago, then became more common by 12,000 years ago. This was a time of major population expansion, starting with, for their purposes, colonization for the first time of eastern Eurasia and finally the New World. The burials reveal a revolving relationship with dogs. Often dog skeletons lay alongside human ones, and in one 7,000-year-old Swedish grave, archaeologists found the remains of a dog stretched out on the legs of the deceased man, as though the man hoped to hold and pet his canine friend for eternity. The dog's neck had been broken, indicating that it had been killed when the owner died. Dogs buried without humans in North and Central America still show a loving touch and possibly a ritualized interment. A grave found in what is now Rhode Island, for example, contains a prehistoric dog that was arranged to lie on its left side with its front paw under its head. The age and condition of the dogs when they died also revealed domestication and the bond with humans, according to Morey. He describes a Middle Archaic burial dating from around 7,000 years ago that was found in what is now Tennessee. The male dog discovered in the grave was unusually old. Its skeleton indicates the animal suffered from traumatic injuries, arthritis and persistent infection, as well as broken bones, some of which had healed and some of which had not. The pathological condition of this dog suggests that the owner ensured the safety and well-being of it throughout its life, since it is doubtful that, given all the traumatic and degenerative conditions, the dog could have survived in the absence of care. An ancient standing stone may be set to share its field with thousands of building blocks and bricks. Developers plan to build 21 new flats near the site of the rural relic at Cardrona in Peeblesshire in Scotland. But local historical environment organisations have raised concerns about the proposal. A representative from Historic Scotland, Leslie Brown, said they have already written a letter to the council's planning department to object about this. The stone is listed as being of national importance, and when we talk about conserving it as a historical monument, we are not only concerned with the physical impact on the stone itself, but upon its setting. This is part of national planning policy. The only way that they would concede is in exceptional circumstances, but there is no real cause for building here. Housing needs are being met elsewhere. Local planning officer Barry Fotheringham said that they have had a number of objections to this. The building would be close enough to the stone to warrant concerns. This doesn't mean necessarily that the application will be refused, but these things will be taken into consideration. Little is known about the stone, but archaeological experts believe it could have been standing in the field from as far back as 3000 BCE. One theory was that it marks an ancient ford crossing for the river Tweed nearby. A sacrificial altar dating back about 7000 years has been discovered in central China's Hunan province, according to Chinese archaeologists. The altar is the earliest sacrificial site so far found in China. Archaeologists have found China's oldest white pottery specimens amongst the altar relics. The pottery is decorated with phoenix and beast patterns. Bones of dozens of animals, including deer, pigs, cattle, bears, elephants and rhinoceros, have been excavated from the 39 sacrificial pits at the site. Examination of the teeth of the pigs dug up at the site indicate they had been domesticated. Once again, can I remind people that there are many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK-based heritage calendar, library and guidance system. These can all be found at Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thank you for listening to this week's Archaeology News, and we hope you return again next week.